This is Audible.
Sound Booth Theater presents Morgana. Everybody Loves Large Chests, Volume 4. Written by Neven Iliev. Narrated by Jeff Hayes. Featuring Annie Ellicott as Kira, Rowana, the Dryads, and the rest of the new female cast. Prologue. Rowana Slythe was an elf that many people would not hesitate to describe as the ideal woman. She was smart, caring, responsible, and gentle, a true delight to be around. She also cut quite the attractive figure with her slim waist, wide hips, and plump bosom. Her face possessed a refined sort of beauty, with bright emerald green eyes, smooth pink skin, and just the slightest hint of makeup to accentuate her features. She also had straight, silky hair that she had dyed platinum white, which fell down to her shoulders like a waterfall. In short, she was about as feminine as a person could get, though this was by no means accidental. Rowana put a lot of work into maintaining her stunning looks through a combination of eating right, regular exercise, and mild alchemical treatments. Her efforts extended into the clothes she wore, too, as the elf always seemed to wear something that was both tasteful and practical. That day, for instance, she was dressed in a long-sleeved white blouse, tight blue trousers, and flat-heeled sandals. She had only just gotten off work and felt too tired and hungry to cook for herself like usual, which was why she was enjoying a hearty soup at a pub near her home. One would imagine a woman like her would prefer far more extravagant establishments than this common eatery, but that was not the case. Despite having an air of class and refinement, Rowana was surprisingly frugal. Kind waitstaff, good food, and agreeable prices were far more important to her than opulence and luxury. She did occasionally get approached by random men trying to hit on the clearly single beauty in the corner, but she kindly, yet firmly, informed them she had zero interest in pursuing a romantic relationship. Granted, that wasn't entirely true, but it required a lot less explanation than the real reason. Most potential suitors got the message and left her alone, but there were some men that required a bit of extra convincing, especially if they'd had a few pints already. In fact, there was one such potential troublemaker in the restaurant on that night. An older elf with oily green hair, dressed in a rather fancy-looking robe with several golden rings on his fingers. Rowana had spotted him sitting at a table near the entrance and wisely chose a seat that was as far away from him as possible. Her judgment, while somewhat shallow, had proven to be right on the money as the man ordered one drink after another. With every beverage he consumed, his words grew louder and more inappropriate. The owner even asked him to keep his voice down and seemed to be on the verge of kicking him out for bothering the other patrons. The tipping point came when a rather odd sight entered the restaurant. It was a young girl, no more than 15 or 16 years of age. She had tan skin, yellow eyes, and, most eye-catching of all, bright crimson hair with a pair of triangular feline ears sticking out at the top. A slender tail with short fur matching her hair color dangled from her lower back, making it abundantly clear that she was neither elf nor human, but a beastkin of the cat variety. She also had a cute face, but the weary expression and worn-down travel clothes were not doing her any favors in Rowana's personal opinion. She still stood out plenty, though, as the entire pub full of elves couldn't help but at least glance at the curious visitor. Unfortunately, the aforementioned drunkard did more than simply gawk at her. Though Rowana couldn't hear his remark over the murmur of the crowd, she clearly saw him slap the cat girl on the bottom as she passed by, followed immediately by her turning around and clawing at his extended arm. The man let out a sharp yell of pain as he stood up, clutching his injured hand. The entire pub went silent as a trickle of crimson liquid ran down the man's arm.
"What the fuck is wrong with you?"
he shouted at her.
"What's wrong with me? What's wrong with you?"
she snapped back at him,
You lay your filthy hand on me again, and I'll do more than just draw blood.
Crazy bitch! Do you have any idea who I am?
You're clearly a lecherous asshole, for one.
An armed guard in silver-colored plate armor burst into the establishment through the front door, interrupting the loud argument just as it was about to go into full swing.
What's going on in here, then?
He asked loudly.
This loony bint just attacked me for no reason,
the drunkard claimed while raising his bleeding forearm.
I did not,
the catgirl argued.
Then how do you explain my bleeding arm?
I mean, I did do that, but only because he slapped my butt out of nowhere.
I didn't mean anything by it. It was an accident.
No, it wasn't. I bet you being born was one, though.
The guard let out a tired sigh as the two continued bickering back and forth. He had only just finished his shift when this sudden civil dispute interrupted his walk back to the barracks. Part of him wanted to ignore it, but he wasn't technically off duty until he reported back to his superior. His patience at an end, the guard grabbed each party by a shoulder.
All right, that's enough out of you two, he cautioned. Why don't you come with me and we'll sort this out later?
She started it!
But he was the one who—
Yes, yes. I'm sure it's a fascinating tale. The boys back at the guard post will be thrilled to hear all about it.
He magnificently ignored their complaints and almost literally dragged them outside. He was clearly intending to lock them both up and let the next shift sort this mess out. He had barely made it out of the door before a soft voice called out to him from behind.
Excuse me, sir?
The man turned around to see Rowana standing there with a concerned look.
Yes, madam.
I clearly saw that man try to molest this girl.
The fuck do you mean, molest, you cur?
The guard squeezed down on the drunkard's shoulder hard enough to turn his cussing into a painful scream.
Quiet, you,
he warned him before turning his attention back to the woman.
You're certain of this, miss?
Yes, sir. The girl was merely trying to defend herself. He was the one at fault, so could you please let her go?
The redhead looked at Rowana, her yellow feline eyes widening in surprise.
Even if that's true, I can't ignore the fact that she openly admitted to physical assault.
He shook his head.
The law is quite clear on this. Once an altercation turns violent, I have to detain all parties involved.
Are you really going to throw this poor girl in a cell after she just got here?
Rowana pleaded.
What's that supposed to mean?
Look at her. She's clearly a foreigner that came from very far away. She probably doesn't know how reliable and honorable our guardsmen are, and didn't think to find one when the guy accosted her. Can't you give her a pass this one time?
I don't know. I really shouldn't do stuff like that.
Think of it this way. Is making this spirited girl spend her first night in Azure Vale in a dungeon worth the paperwork?
You do realize I'd have to let them both go, yes?
I don't think either of them mind.
Both the drunkard and the catgirl vigorously shook their heads to show that no, they most certainly did not.
Fine. I'll let it slide this time,
the guard finally conceded.
You're both free to go. Just don't let me catch you stirring up trouble again.
He released his grip on the redhead, but didn't let the other one go until after he'd escorted him away from the other two.
You didn't really need to do that,
the girl said nervously.
But, thanks. Don't mention it,
Rowana said with a sweet smile.
I'd just hate to see someone locked up over something that wasn't their fault. Actually, wouldn't I have gotten free food and lodging if I was taken away? Maybe I should...
The deadpan seriousness of that grim notion left Rowana momentarily speechless. Was she actually that desperate to find such basic things? No. That look in her eyes as she watched the two men walk down the street made it abundantly clear she was contemplating punching one of them in the face just so she'd get a belly full of food. Though Rowana had only met this beastkin, there was no way she could allow something that pitiful to transpire.
Nonsense!
the elf declared, startling the younger redhead.
I didn't go through all that trouble just to have you throw yourself in chains, did I?
Well, no, but...
No buts, young lady. If you're really that hard up to get something to eat, then why don't you come back inside and order anything you want? My treat.
Just like that?
Just like that.
The woman nodded.
Think of this as my apology on behalf of all elven kind for that arsehole's behavior.
Well, when you put it like that, it would be rude of me to decline, wouldn't it?
She smiled weakly.
That's the spirit. I'm Rowana, by the way. What's your name?
It's Kira.
Pleasure to meet you, Kira. Lovely name, by the way.
You think so?
Absolutely.
The elf nodded.
I dare say it fits you splendidly.
The girl let out an embarrassed giggle.
Now, let's forget about that unpleasantry and get to know each other a little better over dinner.
Sure thing.
The two of them then went back inside the pub and proceeded to do just that. When Rowana woke up the next morning, she felt something soft and warm wrapped around her left arm. When she opened her hazy eyes, the first thing that bobbed into view was a mass of red with two triangular protrusions poking out of it. She blinked once, then twice, then rubbed the sleep out of her eyes with her right hand. It took a few more seconds to sink in, but she was able to confirm that yes, that was Kira currently wrapped around her left arm. In the same bed. Her bed. While both of them were completely naked. The elf broke out into a nervous sweat when last night's memories finally came back to her. This was most certainly not what she had in mind when she told this girl she'd like to get to know each other. Yet they still somehow ended up doing lewd things to each other until they passed out, which mortified Rowana. Was she really capable of doing something this sleazy? Granted, she did feel frustrated because she wasn't brave enough to publicly reveal her sexuality and actively look for a girlfriend, but that didn't justify taking advantage of this girl. This innocent, vulnerable, awkward, sweet, adorable, and surprisingly energetic girl. Kira giggled in her sleep.
Silly rabbit, that's not how cows work.
Rowana couldn't help but smile as she pondered what kind of bizarre dream would warrant that sort of remark. The more she looked at how peaceful the girl seemed, the more her own erratic thoughts calmed down. She realized that, while odd and somewhat questionable, this outcome was hardly the end of the world. Just the opposite, actually. If the elf played her cards right, then maybe, just maybe, the stray cat she picked up last night might stick around for a while. Especially considering how eager said stray cat was to get sticky with Rowana. Though the tortured analogy made the elf feel as if she should apologize to Kira later. Chapter 1. Moonlighting. Part 1. A soft groan filled the messy room as one of its occupants gradually woke from her slumber. A slender girl with platinum blonde hair and pointed ears rose from the double bed while yawning pleasantly. She rubbed the sleep from her emerald green eyes as she lazily looked around her modest, single-room home. There was a stone oven embedded halfway into the wood wall opposite the bed. It had a rectangular brick chimney sticking out of it and up into the ceiling. The corner immediately to the left side of the stove held a plain dining table with three chairs lazily strewn around it. To the right of the stove was a simple wooden cabinet filled with dishes, jugs, and other eating utensils. A sturdy-looking desk with a few quills, an inkwell, and a small pile of paper stood opposite that cabinet, next to the same wall that the bed was up against. A few chests and drawers were lined up on the other side of the bed, under the only window in the house. Needless to say, those held the resident's few worldly possessions such as clothes, mementos, and...
Window?
Mumbled the young elf. why was the window important? This was most definitely her window, exactly the same as it was the night before. So why did it seem so out of place? True, the double glass panes were so filthy that barely any sunlight got through, but she liked it better this way. Having too much light pour in from that side of the room was annoying, if she wanted to focus on her work.
Sunlight?
She mumbled again. She blinked her eyes a few more times before she realized what had happened.
Sunlight!
Rowana suddenly shouted.
Kira, wake up!
She shook her new girlfriend awake, prompting her fiery red hair and plainly cute face to emerge from underneath the covers.
Kira!
The cat-eared girl slowly turned her head to face the panicked elf. Her dull expression blossomed into a full-blown, open-mouthed smile.
Good morning, Rowie.
She leaned forward and wrapped the other woman in a tight hug, her slender tail waving about happily as she rubbed her cheek against Rowana's.
Yes, I'm happy to see you too.
The elf pushed her off.
But you need to go. You'll be late. Hmm? Late? Yeah, the sun's already out. Didn't you have a thing to do today? Oh, crap.
Kira's yellow, cat-like eyes became wide as dinner plates as she realized Rowana was right. She leapt out of bed, grabbed the short bow leaning against the wall, and went for the door at the far end of the room.
Wait!
The older woman screamed.
You're forgetting something! Ah, of course. How silly of me.
The cat girl ran back to the bed and gave the elf a big, wet kiss on the mouth. Their lips separated several seconds later with a loud smack.
I was about to leave without giving you a goodbye kiss. Not that!
The blushing elf exclaimed.
Clothes, Kira! Put on some clothes!
The red-haired cat girl was about to run out into the street completely naked. Although Rowana appreciated the sight of her girlfriend's slim figure, tanned skin, and small yet firm breasts, she didn't particularly feel like sharing it with the rest of the city.
Wow, that was close,
Kira said as she started getting dressed.
Honestly, how are you this much of an airhead?
The elf complained in a huff.
It's your fault,
the other girl shot back while pulling up her custom-tailored leather pants.
If you didn't want to cuddle in the nude until late last night, then I wouldn't have overslept. I can't help it, okay? Your skin just feels way too good against mine. That's why you couldn't.
Kira paused for a second as she pulled her chainmail tunic over her head.
Couldn't get a girlfriend for so long. You're way too selfish. Really now?
The elf raised an eyebrow.
You certainly didn't seem to mind last night. Well, I wasn't running late at the time.
The pair shared an embarrassed chuckle as Rowana idly watched her new sweetheart get ready. Kira put on a pair of wrist-length fingerless gloves made of the same gray leather material as her trousers. But the more the elf looked on, the more concerned she grew.
You be careful out there, all right?
The elf cautioned after a brief pause.
I'll be fine, Rowie.
A smiling Kira reassured her.
Mr. Fayhorn said we'll just be doing some light termite hunting today. Our class average is barely level 10, so I'm sure he won't make us do anything reckless. He's not bullying you, right? I heard some bad things about the guy. No idea who you were talking to, but they're wrong. Sure, he acts all tough and distant, but that's just because he takes his job seriously. He's only hard on us students because he cares about us. Plus, he doesn't treat me differently, even though I'm not an elf. Hmm. I guess he's unexpectedly a nice guy, huh?
Rowana watched in silence as the beastkin pulled a dark green cloth tunic over her chainmail armor and slung an empty quiver across her shoulder. Once that was in place, she put on a pair of metal-plated bracers on her forearms and finished up by buckling a set of matching shin guards to her lower legs and ankles.
There, all done,
she declared while doing a little spin to show off.
No shoes, though,
asked the elf while glancing at her lover's bare feet.
Ah, Mr. Fayhorn says a true ranger must be in tune with his or her surroundings at all times, so going barefoot is a must.
While most of the aged elf's other students were of the opinion that this sort of thinking was outdated and old-fashioned, Kira took his words to heart. She considered herself extremely lucky to be able to study under a famous adventurer like him, so she wasn't going to let a single drop of his wisdom go to waste. Besides, she didn't particularly mind it, as feeling the grass between her toes felt oddly nice. and she was already used to pebbles and twigs digging into her soles.
Kira, one more thing before you go. Can you forego your after-class walk and be back here by sundown?
What? But the night breeze feels so good around here.
I know, but yesterday I heard more news about the crazy vigilante that appeared recently.
Hmm? Oh, you mean that Sandman character? Isn't he one of the good guys, though?
He kills people, Kira. There's no way that's a good guy, no matter how you look at it.
So, what, he should just have a nice chat with the murderers, rapists, and slavers?
No, but I mean, surely even they don't deserve to be killed off without a fair trial.
The only reason you can say that sort of thing is because you've never been a victim.
Kira's uncharacteristically cold words and grim expression made the elf realize she said something she shouldn't have.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
It's fine. It's not your fault.
The elf had momentarily forgotten that her new sweetheart carried some deep scars from her childhood, despite being only 16 years old. The beastkin had already stated that the whole reason she came to this country in the first place was so she could escape her past. So Rowana felt terrible for unintentionally digging it up. Sure, she didn't know the specifics, but she didn't need to. All that mattered was that she would be there for Kira the moment the oddly energetic and slightly airheaded girl felt like sharing her sorrows. The beastkin grabbed her short bow once more, made sure her backup dagger was on her belt, and turned towards the exit to the hovel.
I'll be going then. See you tonight.
She said in a dry, monotone voice while looking over her shoulder.
No, you don't. Let me make it up to you,
insisted the elf.
What sort of girlfriend am I if I send you off with a distraught face like that?
Roey, I'll be okay. You don't have to—
Nonsense. Just have to think of something good. Oh, I know. I'll make your favorite steamed salmon for dinner, so look forward to it.
Really? All right. You're the best.
Seeing her lover cheer up in an instant was enough to put a beaming smile on the elf's face.
I am pretty great, aren't I?
She declared smugly.
Go on now, and stay safe out there, love.
I always do.
Kira walked out the front door in high spirits and breathed in the fresh morning air while looking up at the sky. Far above her head was the loose canopy formed by a dozen or so hilt trees, much like the one Rowana's house was attached to. These magnificent plants grew to a dizzying height of nearly a kilometer and had served as traditional homes to the elves since time immemorial. Or at least that's how it was here in Azurvale, the capital of the Ishigar Republic. Elaborate residences of various sizes and shapes were carved into the side of the tree's thick trunk or built along its colossal branches as if they were streets. Countless suspension bridges connected one hilt tree to another while sprawling wooden walkways spanned between neighboring limbs forming plazas. All in all, about a third of the city's 80,000 residents lived inside or around the colossal tree trunks, though only up to an altitude of about 200 meters. The rest of the locals made their homes on the ground, where they were surrounded on all sides by the hilt tree's gigantic, exposed roots. This created a natural wall, turning the city into a nigh-impregnable fortress. For not only were those roots tens of meters thick and just as tall, but the iron bark that covered every part of a hilt tree was heavily resistant to both physical impact and magical bombardment. Rowana's house wasn't built on the ground. It was a cozy little hovel built into the side of the hilt tree's colossal trunk near the upper edge of the district's residential area. This placed it a good 140 meters above ground level, which was more than a little inconvenient to someone like Kira. She, like all new arrivals to Azurvale, had been unused to living in a city with a third dimension to it. That hadn't lasted long, though, as the aspiring adventurer had already gotten used to navigating this strangely vertical place. The catgirl took a running start and leapt without hesitation from the large wooden platform that served as Rowana's front yard. A sea of dull red rooftops sprawled out beneath her as her small body dropped towards them like a rock. Her arms reached out and grabbed one of the many vines that dangled from the street-sized branch directly overhead, her forward momentum causing the rope-like plant to sway back and forth wildly. Undisturbed by the erratic lateral motion, she wrapped her legs and arms around it and let herself slide downward with practiced ease. Once she reached the end of it, she threw herself off and landed deftly onto the slanted roof of one of the buildings that was erected at the ground level. Taking another small run, she leapt down from the three-story-high rooftop, kicked off the wall of the neighboring building to redirect her momentum, and landed on the mossy ground with a small roll for a perfect 10-point landing.
Ow!
A wooden cane bonked her on the head.
What gives?
She protested while turning around. She discovered her assailant to be a wrinkled old elf with balding gray hair, a slightly hunched back, and a peeved look in his eye.
Oh, it's only Pedro,
she mumbled while rubbing her head.
Don't Pedro me, you hooligan, he admonished her. How many times do I have to tell you to stop doing that sort of thing?
How else am I supposed to get down, then?
Although cozy, Rowana's small house was located in a really awkward part of the neighborhood. Kira had to go all the way down to ground level or climb up to the thick branch further up the tree if she wanted to access any of the city's shops, guilds, or services. At the very least, the government had installed a robust plumbing infrastructure into every tree, so those living in the upper levels didn't have to worry about clean drinking water or waste disposal. It was also no surprise that Kira's vine-swinging shenanigans were by no means the standard method of changing one's altitude.
Use the public elevators like the rest of us.
That particular function was fulfilled by the devices the old elf shouted about as he waved his cane around. There were dozens of house-sized floating platforms that served to provide the city's residents with easy vertical access to all major levels of a hilt tree. One merely had to patiently wait at a designated station for one of those enchanted slabs of ironbark to float by. The automated elevator would stop briefly to recharge its mana and let people get on or off of it before moving on to the next stop along its route.
Those elevators don't stop anywhere near our house,
Kira protested.
Then use the damned walkways. That's what they're there for,
Pedro kept scolding her. Those who were unwilling or unable to use the elevators still had the option of traveling up and down the large ramps and staircases that spiraled around the trunk of every hilt tree. That was how the elves of old typically got around before those magical floating platforms became commonplace. All things said and done, the number of people in Azurvale who performed elaborate acrobatics just to get from A to B could be counted on one hand.
But doing it my way is much faster,
the cat girl insisted as she stood up.
Besides, it's super fun.
Fun? You're going to get yourself killed if you keep it up. Not to mention, you'll ruin the roof tiles of my inn. And my guests are already complaining about the racket you make up there every morning. How are you going to reimburse me if my business suffers because of your careless behavior, huh?
Crap. That's right. I'm late.
The girl then suddenly remembered the whole reason she had to land on this geezer's building in the first place.
I can't waste my time around here. Catch you later, Pedro.
And for the last time, my name is not Pedro.
Kira ran off towards her destination while magnificently ignoring the elder elf's protests about some crazy whippersnapper. She'd be in big trouble if she missed today's outing, as Fayhorn was about as strict as an instructor could get. Even if she managed to catch up with the rest of her group, she'd likely still have to suffer some sort of punishment for her tardiness, the scale of which would be directly proportional to how late she was. That's why she wasn't using just her legs, but ran through the streets on all fours. Beastkin like her had a natural aptitude for quadruped running and an innate agility that made them considerably faster than any other enlightened species. Kira demonstrated these traits magnificently as her graceful, coordinated movements allowed her to move at nearly double the speed of her human way of running. Granted, it was also far more tiring, but this was an emergency. In her haste, Kira ended up causing quite a bit of trouble for the people she passed on the streets. She ducked under carriages, leapt over stalls, swung around streetlights, charged between people's legs, and other such unbridled behavior. While she didn't really cause any property damage, that wasn't to say she didn't startle the crap out of a lot of bystanders. One such person was a stocky elven housewife who was carrying a bucket of water when the beastkin girl suddenly zoomed past her at breakneck speed. The old woman got startled, causing her to drop her bucket on top of an old, disused well she was walking past. Although the rusty grating covering the top prevented the bucket from falling through, the clean water inside it ended up spilling out into the dried-up waterhole. And although the old housewife was more than a little perturbed at this turn of events, the one who was the most upset about the situation was a certain fiend at the bottom of that well.
Gah! What the fuck?
Cora screamed as the cold water splashed over her head.
Be quiet, you moron!
Zira chastised her in a harsh whisper.
This area is off limits, remember? Nobody's supposed to know we're down here. Yeah, I know, I know.
The two demons continued scouring the old, disused tunnels as they had been doing for the past week or so. The reason Zira and Cora were down there to begin with was because their master had been searching for a good place to establish a hidden lair ever since it infiltrated the city 12 days ago. It couldn't just pick any old place for this, because it wanted to make a home base using the dungeon core it had stolen from the Spire of the Jade King. The blue crystal orb had shrunk down to about 50 centimeters in diameter once it completely lost its MP charge and had been sitting quietly in Boxy's storage ever since. However, in order to properly establish a dungeon, the crystalline core needed to be installed in an environment that already had a high concentration of ambient mana. The ex-mimic had learned that those colossal plants the elves used as living spaces were magical in nature. They pulled vast amounts of mana up from the soil in order to sustain themselves, which sounded like just the thing it was looking for. After all, there was bound to be an overflowing stream of magical energy coursing through the ground somewhere near or under those gigantic roots. That space was where this ancient, decrepit series of tunnels came into play. Unfortunately, it was unmapped and in horrible disrepair. Searching through this literal maze of tight, winding passages based on nothing more than simple assumption was not the most productive use of Boxy's time. The shapeshifting monster was already hard at work establishing a new identity within the city, so it had neither the opportunity nor desire to waste time and energy on a wild goose chase. Thankfully, it had two entirely subservient demons who could be volunteered to do the grunt work in its stead.
I just don't see why that damned pipsqueak was the one who got the fun assignment,
Cora complained as she cleared out a collapsed section of the tunnel.
Because she actually knows the value of gold, unlike you, who only knows the value of a tight hole. Okay, can't argue with that. Besides, it will be a good opportunity for that girl to spread the progenitor's name, not to mention practice her anti-personnel combat.
Fizzy's current assignment was something of a win-win-win, no matter how one looked at it. Well, provided she didn't go and get herself killed while fulfilling her duty, but that was unlikely. Mostly because the rank-up she underwent upon hitting level 25 of her metal golem job had made her far too durable to fall to the rabble she battled.
Yo, Bubble Butt!
Cora called.
I think I see something.
The fiend had just opened a small hole in the pile of rubble blocking their way and was peering through it. Zira leaned in and put her cheek next to Cora's in order to get a look for herself. And indeed, just as the red-skinned meathead had said, there was a lit torch visible on the other side of the tunnel. They heard distant shouts echoing down the corridor, though they couldn't make out the words. Having stumbled upon a possible target, the succubus immediately contacted Boxy through their telepathic link.
Master, sorry to disturb your practice, but I think we found another group down here.
Zira and Cora were hardly the only ones skulking through these ancient sewer tunnels, as many gangs and other unsavory elements often hid out down there. This was the third time the two demons had discovered such a place. The first time was when they stumbled upon an illegal slave market. With the second occurrence, they found a weird underground pub that could only be described as a wretched hive of pickpockets, thieves, con artists, and other assorted scum and villainy. Needless to say, none of those people survived their encounter with Boxy and its familiars.
Have you been spotted?
The shapeshifter inquired.
No, not yet at least, but we can see lights and hear voices.
Then stand by and keep an eye on things. I'll come clean them up in a few hours.
And it would appear that Mr. Sandman was about to make yet another appearance. Part 2.
Snack! Get ready for the transfer!
Boxy's sudden telepathic communication caught Zira slightly off guard. She and Cora had been on standby for the past couple of hours, ever since they found traces of life in the old sewer tunnels. Of course, in their case, standby meant that the fiend was exploring some moist tunnels of her own. However, as fun as the act was, it was hardly the ideal position for what was about to happen next, so the fiend hurriedly pulled out of Zira's ass and put her manly side away.
Ready, master,
reported the still out of breath succubus. Several seconds passed in silence as Zira braced herself for what was to come. Her body suddenly started shaking, vibrating even. It grew blurry, almost as if it were out of focus, and then grew slightly transparent. There was a soft, barely audible popping noise, followed by a puff of thick, green smoke that came out from around her feet with a vague scent of sulfur. The smoke cleared a second later, and Zira was gone. In her place was a faceless, child-sized, black-skinned humanoid monster. Boxy grumbled slightly as it curled up on the floor and wrapped itself in its favorite chest-shaped shell. Even if it had gotten more or less used to humanoid forms by now, this was still far more comfortable. It was just a pity that it didn't get a lot of opportunities where it could assume this form in peace since it had to work on maintaining a fake identity.
What should I do, master?
Zira asked through the telepathic link.
Stay out of sight until I have to go back. This shouldn't take long.
The doppelganger pretending to be a mimic, pretending to be a chest, had just used a spell called Transfamiliar. It was a type of teleportation that allowed the warlock and one of its familiars to change places by tapping into the reality-warping energy of the beyond. The spell employed radically different principles to the more traditional spatial magic, which was why it differed in function and application. As for how Boxy had obtained knowledge of this oddly named spell, that was because of its most recently acquired warlock skill. Demonic Insight. The warlock's connection with the demonic realm allows him to tap into the unstable powers of the beyond. Requirements: Level 35 Warlock. Demonology. Type: Passive. Range: Self. Effects: Grants knowledge of a demonic spell at level 1, 3, 6, 8, and 10 of this skill. Increases the effectiveness of the intelligence attribute by 1% per level of this skill. This was the monster's third demon-related skill after Summon Familiar and Demonology. It was a natural choice to strengthen its familiars further, especially since Snack and Arms were the main way it applied its warlock job. Both of them were excellent minions that were just the right combination of dependable, flexible, and expendable. Also, the demonic duo would soon gain an extra member, as the monster's demonology skill was poised to reach level 8 within the week. Hitting that milestone would give Boxy access to a third summoning contract, and it was eagerly anticipating having another minion around to do its bidding. Unfortunately, the demonic insight skill didn't seem particularly useful on its own. The rather modest boost to the monster's intelligence attribute was welcome, but the spells it provided seemed oriented towards utility rather than defense or offense. This wasn't necessarily a bad thing, though. Transfamiliar, which was gained at level 3 of the skill, was quite the convenient spell, although it did have an obnoxious long chant. At least that drawback was alleviated somewhat by the chant reduction skill the mimic had acquired at warlock level 30. This passive skill did exactly what its name implied, allowing the monster to activate all of its spells a bit faster by skipping certain parts of their chants without affecting their effectiveness.
Arms, where's the prey?
Boxy asked once it had gotten its bearings.
Over there, beyond that rubble.
Cora pointed towards the collapsed section of the tunnel. Boxy walked up to the pile of rubble and peered through the small, head-sized opening its familiar had made earlier. It saw the swaying, reddish light of torches and heard distant voices. This place was most definitely home to someone, which meant it was a perfect spot for it to feed on people without attracting too much unwanted attention. The relatively simple plan was the same since it crossed the border. Unfortunately, things hadn't worked out quite as expected. Boxy's first order of business upon arriving in Azurevale had been to seek out some unsavory criminal elements in order to unload the Empire-forged arms and armor it had acquired. While it had no trouble finding buyers, It did have a disagreement with them concerning the price. The representatives it met with demanded that Boxy sell them its goods for the nominal price of fuck all, which was obviously unacceptable. Finding themselves at an impasse, the two parties then engaged in an intense bout of negotiation. When an amicable agreement wasn't reached, the Mimic kindly requested to meet with the employer of these stubborn individuals to work things out like gentlemen. It was a request to which those fellows rejected, but ultimately accommodated. Long story short, an established crime boss, 30 of his top men and everything of value they owned all disappeared without a trace overnight. Word of this shocking event spread through the city like wildfire. That particular criminal was known to have connections to many influential people and was largely considered untouchable. He was known for bribery, blackmail, taking hostages, and all sorts of other underhanded methods to keep the authorities out of his hair. So, it really should have come as no surprise that having his mansion ransacked, smashed up, and partially burned down would be big news. The dire state his place of residence had been found in made it abundantly clear that its residents did not meet a pleasant fate, especially since there had been a notable absence of bodies at the scene. It was as if a vengeful tornado of violence and anger had swept through the underground organization, leaving behind nothing more than a collection of splintered wood, shattered stone, and bloody smears. That was hardly the end of it. The bizarre event repeated itself the very next day as another allegedly criminal organization was dismantled completely, including their illegal slavery racket. Following this was the news that an underground guild of thieves and robbers was wiped out the day after in much the same way. Two underground gambling dens and an illegal drug laboratory followed suit within the week. It didn't take long for the people of Azurevale to conclude that someone was systematically targeting and wiping out these criminal outfits. The rumors spoke of an ominous figure lurking in the shadows, pursuing either their own brand of justice or exacting bloody vengeance on those who had wronged them. It didn't take long for the people to start referring to this mysterious individual as the Sandman. However, the vigilante in question had no idea as to why they were calling it that. True, Boxy's cadaver absorption skill turned dead bodies into black ashes that could be seen as sand-like, but the locals wouldn't know that. Boxy planned to stick around Azurevale for quite a while, so it made sure to clean up after itself in order to make it harder for both the authorities and that terrifying spymaster to track it down. It carried buckets, mops, alchemical solvents, and several jugs of clean water inside its storage for this express purpose. It could, of course, simply eat the ashes, but it didn't want to do that unless it really had to. After all, they tasted worse than literal dirt. Yet, despite its best efforts, the fledgling doppelganger still ended up causing a commotion. It didn't like this development one bit, as it had intended to prey on targets that society wouldn't miss. Surely notorious criminals fit that bill, right? However, that was clearly not the case, and now it had a reputation it didn't want. Rumor that a merciless vigilante was hunting criminal elements was sure to cause said elements to go into hiding, or step up their security, which in turn would make Boxy's search for dinner all the more difficult. At the very least, the city of Azurevale didn't seem to have a clue as to the Sandman's real identity. Reports and hearsay on the topic described it in vague terms like ominous figure or crazy bastard, hinting that the shapeshifter had not accidentally let a witness get away. That said, it wasn't liking this attention one bit. Boxy briefly considered lying low for a while, but the damage was already done. Besides, Zira had pointed out that this Sandman persona might be useful later on, so there was no real reason for the monster to change its hunting habits, which was why it was currently in an underground tunnel, looking to make lunch out of yet more undesirables. It was eager to finish things down there and get back to blending in with the other adventurers, so it momentarily undid its chesty transformation. Once it was back to being the size of a preteen, it crawled through the opening in the rubble that Cora had made earlier. It then used the transfamiliar spell as quietly as possible to transport the oversized fiend to the other side of the blockage. It could have simply widened the hole, but doing so would raise too much noise, not to mention it might collapse the old passage further. Boxy crawled through the hole a second time and assumed its preferred shape once more. Now that both of them were through, they started walking through the abandoned waterways. The stone brick passage they found themselves in was only about 2 meters tall, so Cora had to move forward while crouching and keeping her head down, lest her horns scrape against the low ceiling. Her posture was uncomfortable and awkward, but at the very least this part of the tunnel system didn't have any stagnant water or old moss stinking it up. So there was that. The two of them steadily made their way along the straight tunnel towards the flickering torchlight. They arrived at a small T-shaped junction, with the passage splitting left and right. Boxy commanded Cora to stay put, activated its stealth skill, and peered around the right corner, the one the light was coming from. The passage fed into a large cylindrical chamber that appeared to have people in it. It couldn't quite see them, but it definitely heard multiple voices. The almost mimic colored its chest-shaped shell a dark gray to match its surroundings and crept steadily forward, making sure to remain on high alert. Once the spider chest reached the end of the tunnel, it pressed itself against the right side of it and took a good look around. The chamber appeared to be some sort of old cistern or water reservoir, as it was at least 30 meters in diameter and had a height of about 7 meters, although any water that was once here had long ago dried up. Several columns of light shone down from round holes in the ceiling, likely old wells that had been sealed up by metal grates. However, the things that provided most of the visibility down here were numerous torches lining the far edge of the room, placed around the stone columns holding up the ceiling. In that light stood a group of 9 elves. 5 of them were huddled around a small bonfire with a metal pot on it, preparing what appeared to be some type of soup. The other 3 rested on makeshift bedding. The final one was off to the side with his back turned towards the rest and was taking a leak. Judging from their ragged clothing and overall depressing atmosphere, not to mention the torn-up tents that barely provided any shelter, these people seemed to be nothing more than hobos that had taken shelter here. Upon closer inspection, the shapeshifter spotted a frayed rope ladder dangling from one of the well openings overhead, likely their way in and out of the place. Boxy then suddenly had an epiphany. Thinking back on its brief stay in Erosa, the monster realized it had killed a large number of bums and attracted 0 attention, which meant those people were the ones society wouldn't miss. The poor, destitute, and homeless existed in every major city and were largely ignored by higher-class citizens, so nobody of importance would care if they disappeared. If it had just preyed on these guys rather than going after notorious criminals, then that questionable Sandman rumor would never have started in the first place. Well, it didn't really regret doing that. Attacking those criminals provided the monster with a sizable chunk of XP, and they were quite delicious in their own right. These bums, on the other hand, were barely even people, as their bodies were skinny, disease-ridden sacks of stringy flesh. The most Boxy could do with their corpses was use them as fodder for its cadaver absorption proficiency, though a success would likely yield very little. Right now, it would probably just devour them. Even if they weren't particularly tasty or filling, they were still very much edible. Not to mention that they would serve as a good source of proficiency for its newly acquired demonic insight skill. Boxy went out of the tunnel it was hiding in and stealthily climbed the walls. It then crawled along the ceiling, making sure to stick behind the supporting pillars whenever possible so as to hide its body from view. Once it got close enough, it started chanting the spell it got at level 1 of demonic insight. Being under the effects of stealth allowed the monster's arcane assassin perk to kick in. It muffled the sound of its voice, allowing it to cast the spell in total silence, albeit at an increased MP cost. The monster finished invoking its spell a few seconds later with a silent utterance of implosion. There was a flash of blinding green light accompanied by a high-pitched wail that sent all 9 of the homeless elves into a panic. The inexplicable phenomenon had occurred directly over their little bonfire, so those sitting around it were losing their shit at a rapid pace. They managed to calm themselves down for a moment when they realized they weren't actually injured, but that relief disappeared just as quickly as it had arrived. A large number of high-pitched, squawking voices filled the chamber as the elves found themselves surrounded by nearly 30 squirrel-sized monsters. The tiny creatures resembled miniature satyr due to their humanoid upper halves and furry, goat-like lower bodies. Their bodies and their fur came in all manner of colors, although most of them were either a dull yellow or a dark red. Their pointy horns, long noses and ears, and thin, rodent-like tails poking out of their backsides gave them a strangely comical appearance. They were imps, the demonic equivalent of rats. These otherworldly vermin barely had any self-awareness or strength of their own, which made them wildly unpredictable. They cackled and pranced about randomly, as the elves were too shocked by this sudden turn of events to even scream. For the briefest moment, it seemed like these strange creatures would just go away as long as they stood perfectly still. But that wouldn't last. All it took was for one of the elves to inhale a bit too sharply, and every last one of those tiny demons flew into a frenzy. Some of them started clawing and biting at the unfortunate bums, while others bombarded them with tiny bursts of flame. However, almost all of their attacks did practically zero damage. Their tiny hands and short teeth could barely even draw blood, while the puny magical power behind their fiery projectiles would at most singe the filthy rags these homeless elves draped themselves in. Their assault was painful and annoying, but by no means lethal. It didn't take long for the bums to fight back by kicking them around, stomping them underfoot, or smashing them with whatever cookery, wooden canes, or loose bricks were at hand. They had no idea what was going on, but they weren't about to just roll over and die. Not that there was any chance of that happening, though. Imps were so pathetically weak that they probably wouldn't even beat a 9-year-old unless 6 or 7 of them ganged up on the child. So, this situation where 30 of them challenged 9 fully grown adults was a foregone conclusion. However, Boxy wasn't done quite yet. Another loud bang and blinding flash flooded the room as the shapeshifter used the misleadingly named implosion spell yet again. Another swarm of the demonic vermin popped out from the rift that momentarily opened to the beyond, bringing the total number of imps up to about 50. The new arrivals happily joined the fray as the homeless elves kept trying to fight them off. Yet another gaggle of imps appeared from nowhere, but they still wouldn't be enough to actually defeat the elves. Not that their summoner really cared about who won this scrap. Boxy's goal was to train its demonic insight skill, so having those people struggle against the effects of its implosion spell was exactly what it wanted. The aforementioned skill's proficiency would steadily go up just so long as the imps it summoned had someone or something to play with. It would keep using the spell as many times as its MP would allow, which wasn't a lot, considering it consumed 10% of its maximum MP, even without it having to pay an extra 25% of that in order to cast it silently. This oddity struck the monster as strange at first. Typically speaking, spells appeared to have a fixed cost and would increase in power with the related mastery skill, the intelligence attribute, and any magical amplification gained from items. However, these demonic spells worked by their own rules, and did not seem to actually have a related mastery skill. In fact, they weren't even recognized as an official school of magic like Ruin or Domination, seeing as the monster's spell list had categorized them as Other. But the shapeshifter had quickly realized that this was simply how beyond-related magic worked. Looking at the Summon Familiar skill, or the Offering rituals, it was obvious that the strength of the magical effect was directly proportional to the amount of mana used to invoke it. In the case of the former, a higher amount of spent MP would result in a stronger familiar. For the latter, it wouldn't affect the power that the summoned overlord could exhibit, but supplying the demonic big shot with more mana would allow them to maintain their physical form for longer. As for the implosion spell, it would increase the number of imps called forth from the beyond at a rate of 8 to 12 imps for every 100 MP spent. However, unlike the ritual or the skill, Boxy could repeat the spell as many times as it wanted, which was precisely what it did. It was actually starting to enjoy watching the spontaneous hobo imp war. The noise even attracted several homeless people from neighboring tunnels who act as reinforcements. There was just so much going on that it was impossible to keep track of everything and made for a surprisingly entertaining show. In fact, the number of imps grew so much that the idiotic creatures started fighting one another because the crowd around the elves was too dense. As for those unfortunate bums, it appeared they were already at their limits. Their bodies were covered in scratches, bite marks, and burns. Their feeble stamina was quickly running out, and their faces were gripped by despair. Even if the opposing side's soldiers were pitifully weak by comparison, the elves had no chance of winning against what appeared to be a never-ending stream of enemies. Something that Boxy had every intention to prove. Chaotic energies swirl around you. You will be teleported in a random direction within the next 5 seconds. However, it would seem that the chaotic disposition skill was about to interfere. Boxy didn't even have time to react as its chesty body suddenly vanished with a flash of blue light and reappeared some 15 meters from its original location with another flash. The monster had relocated to a spot in the middle of the chamber directly above the cacophony of bum-on-imp combat. Having nothing to grab onto, it fell right in the middle of the melee with a loud thud.
Oh, crap.
Crushing a few of the imps under chest. The paupers naturally did not fail to notice the spider-legged box that appeared out of thin air, nor were the imps completely impartial to this newcomer. The monster calmly picked itself up off the ground and sighed internally. It had gotten perhaps a bit carried away, as it suddenly remembered it had places to be and things to do. Deciding not to waste any more time, it sprouted four long whip-like tentacles covered in tiny blades. It then spun around in place like a horrific weed whacker, severing the lives of demons and elves alike while bathing the chamber in their blood. It waited for half a minute for the demonic corpses and their bodily fluids to disappear into thin air before it quickly chowed down on the mutilated homeless. Once it was done, it sent a telepathic communication to Zira.
Snack, I'm done here. How are things on your end?
All good, Master. I think you're... colleagues are starting to notice your absence, though.
Okay, then prepare for another transfer.
Understood. Just let me find a good spot that's hidden from view.
Arms, the chamber is clear. Come here and resume the search with Snack once she returns.
You got it, boss.
Boxy let out another sigh. It really wanted to stay in its chesty form a while longer, but it wasn't something it could afford to do just yet. It had recently obtained a new job, and it wanted to avoid learning things the hard way like it did with its warlock job. Thankfully, most of the adventurer guilds in this city provided excellent training courses for aspiring adventurers, so at least it wouldn't have to look for a teacher. It didn't have much trouble blending in, either, although it struggled to contain its appetite around the other students. Especially around that one positively delicious-looking apprentice in Fayhorn's class. Part 3.
Man, I am beat,
Kira complained, sweat running down her face.
Are you all right, Red?
The female elf next to her asked more out of courtesy than concern. She was a young woman around Kira's age, her leaf-green hair tied in a practical ponytail. She wore a set of chainmail equipment identical to the Beastkins, which was standard-issue gear among ranger trainees of the Hidden Arrow Guild.
I'll be fine, Leah. Just gotta rest a bit. If you say so.
The two of them were riding a cart on their way back from a training session. Today's hunting expedition had turned out to be much harsher than Kira expected, so it was only natural that she was dead tired. Though it wasn't because the 10-man class's targets were particularly challenging. Those sheep-sized termites that ate away at the elves' hilt tree farm to the south of the city were simple enough to deal with. Their shells weren't particularly tough, and they lacked any form of ranged attack, so a small team of rangers could easily take down a large number of the giant bugs. In fact, trainees like Kira were often dispatched to act as pest control since fighting those things allowed them to safely and steadily acquire levels and skill proficiency. Well, provided they steered clear of the actual nest, as that particular threat required copious amounts of fire-based magic to safely clear out. What these fledgling archers had to do was merely cull the termite population to make it easier to manage and contain their spread.
So, how many did you get today?
Asked Leah.
I got 20. You?
23. Looks like you'll have to try better next time.
Just you wait. I'll get better and definitely beat you.
Kira stated confidently.
I don't plan on just letting you catch up to me, though.
The elf smirked. The two's scores for the day were rather impressive, as most trainees only managed to bring down about a dozen termites on average in that time. Those pests loved to climb up the sides of the 40 to 60 meter tall hilt saplings and nibble on the bark and branches, so hunting them often involved dealing with the numerous limbs and leaves that got in the way. This was typically accomplished either by climbing up the side of the tree in order to get a clean shot, or relying on pure marksmanship to take them down from the ground. Kira had gone for the first approach, while Leah opted for the latter. Both of them performed exceptionally well for their level, but neither could hope to match the guy who came in first today. And every day.
I just wish that Miller guy wouldn't show off so much,
said Leah, while glaring at the plain-looking male elf riding the cart in front of theirs.
I mean, I appreciate a little rivalry, but he just makes me feel inadequate. Why? How many did he get? 30. 7. Wow. Okay. It's not just the body count, either,
the female elf continued.
The way he runs up those trees and that scary accuracy of his both make me wonder if he's really in the level 10 to 15 bracket.
He's not.
A sudden male voice from the side made both girls jump a little in surprise. A grizzled old elf with slicked back brown hair and most of his left ear missing walked alongside the cart. A thick, rune-inscribed longbow was slung across his torso and bouncing off fancy, silver-scale armor.
Ah! Instructor Fayhorn?
Leah exclaimed.
What do you mean?
His ranger level is significantly higher than yours, explained the old elf. But his actual skill level is atrocious.
A power leveler, huh?
You are correct, Miss Torley, he nodded to Leah. If he had the same attributes as you two, he'd struggle to get even half as many as he did.
So that's why he seems to have it so easy.
Indeed. Well, he's properly absorbing my teachings and isn't as overconfident as most power levelers, so I'm sure I can fix him right up before the end of the course.
What's a power leveler?
Kira asked sheepishly.
I've heard about it before, but...
It's what we call people who get their job level artificially raised, said the instructor. Attacking a high-leveled monster and then having someone else finish it off in order to gain easy XP is a fast way to raise job levels. But I disapprove of that approach, since those people never learn to apply themselves properly.
Fayhorn tried to instill two main lessons in all his students. Don't mistake status for ability, and power without direction is meaningless. While developing one's attributes, skills, and jobs would make them more powerful, being able to properly utilize that power was what made the difference between a good adventurer and a great one.
There are some things you won't learn from just gaining a bunch of levels, continued Fayhorn. Punctuality, for example. Isn't that right, Miss Morgana?
Having her last name called out so suddenly made Kira freeze in place with a stiff smile. Being subjected to the instructor's piercing gaze didn't help matters either.
Come on, Mr. Fayhorn,
she pleaded.
I already did a 20-kilometer run this morning, didn't I?
That was her punishment for being late earlier today, and also the main reason she looked like she was about to pass out. The instructor purposefully kept pushing her for the remainder of the day, not willing to give her exhausted body the chance to fully recover. There was a good chance the cat girl might not have made it back to the city if she wasn't allowed to ride the supply cart. Fayhorn wanted to make her walk the whole way, but he also promised that she could rest on the way back if she made it in the top three. Which, surprisingly, she had. It was amazing how motivated she became at the prospect of being able to laze about.
You did. Though I think another 50 or so kilometers are in order, he said sternly. Guess you can do them tomorrow.
Surely that's too much just for being a little late,
she pleaded with him. this is unrelated to you being tardy.
It is?
I've been thinking about this for a while. You get tired way too easily. You need to learn to pace yourself better.
Teacher?
Spoke up Leah.
I don't think it's a matter of pacing. Don't all beastkin get tired easily?
The young elf had a point. Compared to elves, beastkin tended to be faster, more agile, and had slightly sharper senses, but their stamina was atrocious. An elf ranger of Kira's level would normally be able to run those 20 kilometers without so much as breaking a sweat, and yet she was a total wreck from just that.
You may have a point, said Fayhorn, much to the two girls' surprise. We don't get many of her kind around these parts, so I didn't take that into account. It was my fault as a teacher, for which I apologize.
It's okay, Mr. Fayhorn,
Kira insisted, her cheeks red from embarrassment.
You really don't need to worry.
No, no. I really need to consider your race when thinking up your training menu.
The grizzled ranger cupped his chin in thought as he sped up to check on the slow-moving cart up ahead.
Perhaps a 20-kilometer run every morning and evening to help build stamina,
he mumbled as he speed-walked away.
Leah, don't say unnecessary things!
The redhead stared at her colleague as if she had just condemned her to a life in prison, making the guilty elf avert her gaze.
Well, he does have a point,
she offered weakly.
Being a ranger is a taxing job, so having more endurance is hardly a bad thing.
I'll die. I'll seriously die if I have to run that much every day,
the catgirl complained.
Hmm? Hey, Kira, not for nothing, but I think that guy is staring at you again.
Leah's rather clumsy attempt at changing the subject seemed to work, as the catgirl's accusatory stare was redirected to follow the elf's line of sight. Looking forward, she noticed that the supposedly high-leveled elf they were talking about earlier was staring at her over his shoulder. Their eyes met for a brief moment. Then he turned his gaze back forward.
That boy, I'll bet he has a crush on you,
Leah teased her.
He's been sneaking glances for a while now. Huh? But we've barely even spoken. Maybe. But you're pretty and energetic, and surprisingly adorable when you get flustered.
When you put it like that, I guess you have a point.
The cat girl calmed down, her cheeks slightly browning from embarrassment.
So? Aren't you going to go talk to him?
Leah urged.
Why would I? Shouldn't you go talk to him? Maybe give him a chance?
No, I don't think I should.
Oh, come on, live a little. His face isn't half bad, and Mr. Fayhorn made him sound like a responsible guy. He's not my type, okay?
Kira snapped, sounding annoyed.
Besides, I already have someone. Wait, what? You're already in a relationship?
The catgirl's pouting face lit up with a brilliant smile comparable to a sunrise.
I am indeed. How? Why? When? I mean, you only got here a week ago, right?
What can I say? When you meet that special someone, you just know right away.
The dreamy look in Kira's eyes made it abundantly clear she wasn't just saying that. She believed it.
Details! Give me details!
Leah insisted, hungry for gossip.
Well, it's not that big a deal. I mean, I was just looking for a cheap place to stay when I arrived here, but didn't have a lot of luck finding one. It was getting late, so I went into this restaurant for dinner. It was crowded and noisy, and I noticed this guy at the bar in some fancy clothes.
Leah swallowed audibly as she clung onto every word.
Then he slapped my butt, so I clawed him across the arm.
Huh?
Oh, yeah, he must have gotten some mixed signals or something and groped my butt when I walked past, so I reflexively slashed at him. It was a shame, too. He got blood all over my clothes. Then a guard came in, and he got super angry.
Of course he did! I mean, I guess the guy sort of deserved it, but attacking him with those things seems overboard.
Leah had seen the retractable claws hidden in Kira's otherwise normal-looking toes and fingertips. One really wouldn't know they were there unless she brought them out. They looked rather small and unthreatening at first glance, but the elf knew better.
She had seen firsthand just how sharp and tough they really were when Kira used them to scale those hilt saplings with absolutely no difficulty. That's how she was able to get third place in today's hunting expedition despite being dead tired the whole time.
My butt is really sensitive.
The beastkin blushed.
That's not the point! You can't just assault people like that! Anyway, the guy raised a huge fuss over that tiny scratch.
Kira continued her story while completely ignoring Leah's protests. She explained how she nearly got jailed because the guy kept saying she attacked him unprovoked. Then Rowana showed up and managed to talk him into sparing everyone a bunch of headaches and letting both parties go. She then invited Kira back into the restaurant, offering to buy her dinner to apologize on behalf of her fellow elf.
It was the nicest thing anyone's done for me in a long time,
the redhead said with tears welling up in her eyes.
Then we started talking, and one thing led to another, and we ended up living together.
There was a brief moment of silence as Kira stood there with a slight smile while hugging her knees.
So?
Asked Leah after the brief pause.
So, what? Is that all there is to the story? Pretty much. But weren't you going to tell me how you met your lover? I just did, didn't I? But you didn't mention a boyfriend or anything like... Oh.
Leah's words trailed off as realization washed over her like a cold shower.
What's wrong, Leah?
Kira asked, looking confused.
Oh, sorry. I was just a bit surprised. I mean, your face and voice are just so feminine that I just assumed you were a girl. That was bad of me. I am a girl,
the redhead said sternly.
You are? What's with that dubious expression? I'm most definitely a girl. I mean, I know my chest is a bit small, but I have room to grow. Here, I'll prove it to you.
Kira's hands grabbed the edge of her chainmail tunic and started rolling it up.
Okay, I believe you, so please stop stripping.
Leah waved her hands around in a fluster, somehow managing to calm down the ticked-off cat girl. If she denied it to that extent, then it was obvious the elf misunderstood the nature of the misunderstanding. That did, however, raise another question.
So, you, are in a relationship with another girl?
She asked after another awkward pause.
Yep, Rowie's the best girlfriend I could ever ask for.
Kira's previous dissatisfaction disappeared in an instant when the topic of her special someone came up. Her wide smile and sparkling eyes made it seem like her angry fit was an illusion.
And you said you two live together? It's kind of embarrassing when someone else says it.
The petite cat girl hid her blushing cheeks with her palms while shaking her head lightly, although her goofy grin did not diminish in the slightest. It was without a doubt the image of a maiden in love. Wait, was she actually still a maiden?
Then, have you two done it?
Asked Leah, unable to contain her curiosity. Kira's tanned skin flushed with an even darker shade of red at the slightly inappropriate question. She didn't deny it, but couldn't bring herself to admit it either. Which was more or less the same as screaming,
"Yes, we've had sex!"
with all her might.
Wow. So this little girl has already become a woman, huh? Leah! Sorry. I was just a little surprised. I didn't mean anything by it.
The elf let out an embarrassed chuckle and apology while trying to calm down the hyperactive beastkin she was riding with. However, both her face and tone turned rather serious a few seconds later.
Look, Kira, I appreciate you sharing this with me, but you might want to avoid telling too many people about that relationship of yours. Huh? What are you talking about? Just, please, hear me out. I don't know how things were back where you grew up, but Azure Vale is hardly the best place for those like you. While a lot of people don't really care, there are quite a few fanatics that think same-sex couples should be outlawed. You probably had no idea about any of this, right?
Kira shook her head with a troubled expression.
As I thought, look, you have to understand that it's a religious thing, The vast majority of elves worship Nairi, the goddess of nature and fertility. Her realm mostly has to do with crops and livestock. But it also technically includes... baby making.
So what?
She hates people who don't make kids? No, she doesn't. At least, I don't believe she does. There are those who say otherwise, however. There's a certain... movement that claims couples that can't bear children are heretical and should be prohibited. Or worse. And while such a stupid law is unlikely to become a reality, it doesn't stop them from doing terrible things to innocent people.
Kira had no idea how to respond. She had absolutely no idea this was the case, but it made sense now that she thought about her various interactions ever since she came to the city.
My point is, you might be targeted if word got out. But why didn't Rowie mention any of this? She was probably scared to tell you since it's a difficult subject for her. Besides, you probably have a few secrets of your own, right?
Yeah, I see.
Thanks a lot for telling me this, Leah. Don't mention it. All I ask is that you don't let that vocal minority warp your perception of us elves.